Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything we talk about is aimed at helping you lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in anxious times. And my name is Irvin Nugent. And today, as always, I'm delighted to welcome my friend and my collaborator and co-host, Bridget Tyre. Bridget, how are you today?
Well, thank you for asking, Irvin. Such a nice way you have of asking, how are you? Because it sounds so genuine, like you really want to know.
I do.
And the truth is, I'm doing pretty darn good today.
Excellent.
You know, I often tell our listeners that when I first see you, because we obviously can see each other as we record, we do it visually. I often comment on what you're wearing. And today you're wearing this beautiful blue shirt that is just fantastic on you.
And
you're in a peppy mood. And I'm excited about this topic. So, Irvin, tell our listeners a little bit about what's in store.
This is a topic that basically every leader will face. And you know what? Just not every leader, every person will face in the world that we live in today. And the title of the podcast we're calling Leading When You Don't Have All the Answers. You know, it is clear that we are in times of uncertainty. And that uncertainty in many ways feels like it is increasing. In uncertainty, we still have to make decisions. And that's difficult. And I think for leaders, it's a difficult because there's a balance. I think in one sense, there's this internal need or felt pressure that I need to be confident. I need to be decisive. Like this is what our model of leadership is. As if like people almost have this expectation that you have a crystal ball of where things are going.
Yeah.
But you know, the truth is that leadership rarely comes with perfect clarity. And information is missing and circumstances are changing rapidly and the path forward is often unclear. And so the question therefore is, how can leaders still move forward? How can leaders still make decisions, inspire others when the answers aren't clear? And I think that would be a wonderful thing to dive into today. And you know, the research really backs this up as well. I was just looking at a recent McKinsey study and then it found that 72% of executives say their organizations are facing more ambiguity, more complexity now than they did 5 years ago. It's the VUCA. We've mentioned VUCA before. And so 72 are feeling this. And in the same survey, only 15% feel confident enough to lead through it. So that's a huge disconnect. You know, 72% and 15% only feel confident. So there's a lack of confidence out there of leaders who feel they should be and they're not. And I think, you know, what we'll drive home today a little bit as we discuss it is that it's when leaders pretend that they have the answers, when they have it figured out, that's when it backfires. Because I think what the research shows that employees report higher levels of distrust and disengagement. And so what we know as well is that leaders who are upfront and say, hey, I don't know, I'm uncertain, but yet show a little steadiness in that. In fact, their trustworthiness and efficacy increases. So there you go. So the research is telling us, hey, leaders, you don't have to have all the answers. You just have to be honest and vulnerable in admitting that, and people will trust that rather than you trying to pretend it. So let's unpack that. Let's unpack what's going on here. And maybe as a way to begin, Bridget, I would be curious. You know, as you think about your career, you think about all the experiences you've had, what have you noticed about how you handle moments when you don't have all the answers and you feel you have to make a decision?
Well, I think the answer to that question has changed over time.
Love that.
Early in my career, I had such a high need for clarity and I would say for closure. And I can look back on my life and look back on my career and see how I often pushed for closure prematurely because of my own anxiety of wanting answers that I didn't have, right? And feeling so uncomfortable about being in that space. And I could, early on in my career, I could see it showing up. For example, you know, you and I do a lot of facilitating, we do leadership training. And I remember early on, I would be so anxious about people asking me a question when I'm in front of a group that I didn't know the answer to. But now I actually welcome it. I think, oh my God, that's great. Like, what a great question. And I'm able to like be present in that moment and be like, you know, I actually don't know, but I'm so glad you brought that up. So that's a big shift for me. Now, you know, do I still love uncertainty? No. And would I like to have all the answers to life's dilemmas? Sure. But I rest more comfortably in the not knowing than I used to. And I wonder, Irvin, if that's just kind of what happens to humans as we mature, or has my work just required that of me? I'm not certain.
That's an interesting thing. Yeah. Yeah. Well, with wisdom, you know, maybe with a little wisdom, we know that life is rarely that simple. Yeah. Yeah.
And what about you? Because I'm fully curious.
You know, this is an area, as I was thinking about this and I was thinking about my own reaction, I think a little bit like you, I think earlier on, I think I wanted to make decisions. I've always really been able to make decisions. I'm not really a procrastinator. I'm able to be direct, make decisions. Now, I think I come the other end of you. And I think at times I made decisions too hastily and didn't sit in the discomfort of not having the answers, because I think what's beautiful about your example, and I think I'm going there as well, is this ability to sit in the muckiness at times of not feeling you have the answer. Yeah. And maybe a part of me is I didn't want to appear vulnerable back then. And so I make a decision maybe too hastily. And there's a couple of examples, mm-hmm. I think, where I made decisions far too hastily. But now I think, like you, I'm more prepared to, you know, sit in the discomfort. What's really interesting is, and I don't know if this happens to you, sometimes when I'm with a client and we're kind of discussing, say, a facilitation that's coming up, and it's like they want clarity about what this facilitation is going to be. And sometimes I'll say, I'm not sure we have clarity. And there's a pushback to that. I can feel it. Yeah. And it's like, it's an appreciation. Okay, I'm okay with the lack of clarity, yeah. but they're clearly not, you know? So it's kind of interesting the way it goes. Yeah.
I totally get that. I'm thinking of a client one time years ago. So this is, I'm going to say, gosh, maybe 12 or 15 years ago. And he didn't have clarity in what he was trying to decide about his career. Instead of resting comfortably in it, I actually was pushing him to get clarity prematurely, I think, because I wasn't comfortable with it. It's kind of the reverse of what you were saying, right?
Yeah. So we always try, Bridget, and put things in a systems, like zoom out a little bit, and like what's going on here, just from a systems perspective. So I'm just curious, kind of, as you think about this discussion and not having the answers, any insights on from a systems perspective, what might be going on?
Yeah, I think this is so, so helpful, because when we do take a systems perspective to look at things, we recognize that uncertainty isn't just an individual leader's challenge. It's a systemic challenge, right? Yeah. So why is that? Well, the human brain doesn't like uncertainty because it likes to make predictions. And since relationship systems are made up of human beings, guess what? They don't like uncertainty either. Yeah. And so when there aren't clear answers, anxiety rushes into a relationship system. It starts to percolate and intensify. And this is when you see people, I think you start to see the rumor mill. I think you see people making assumptions. I think sometimes people go to the worst case scenarios. So anxiety fills the gap, right? Yeah. Now, the good news is that leadership presence matters more to calming a system than information. And I think that bears repeating, right?
Yeah, let's repeat that. I love that.
Leadership presence matters more than information. So in a system, what calms anxiety isn't always a perfect plan, a perfect answer, but instead it's a leader's steadiness, honesty, and presence. I think that's some good news for leaders, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
And then I think the other thing is that recognizing and remembering that transparency is what creates alignment. So when you as a leader share what you do know, but what you don't know and what you're still trying to figure out, and you're really transparent about that, it actually reduces gossip and it calms people and it builds trust. It's like, okay, this person's being real with us. Yeah. I can trust, you know, what they're saying. So I'm going to go back to something you said at the beginning, which I thought was so important. Leading without all the answers is not about pretending.
Yeah.
It's about managing the anxiety of the system, your own and otherness, you know, your own and others.
Yeah.
With that sense of openness and steadiness.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I love that, you know, because it's bringing back a concept that we have talked about in a few different episodes and, you know, as part of resilience. And that is this idea of a less anxious presence. So like when a leader, and it's, I always say, this is the best news the leader ever has, but so often, you know, leaders are all about, you know, well, how do I control other people? Or how do I manage people, et cetera? And I said, you know what? You just have to manage yourself. And if you can come in with a little bit less anxiety than what's floating around you, you're going to calm the system down. And that's such a light bulb for many leaders. It's like, whoa. And this is exactly, I think, what's been brought up here is like presence is better. You know, you can go in and say, well, I have an answer, but people will pick up. Are you saying that confidently? Are you saying that nervously, et cetera? But if you can go in with a presence and say, you know, I don't have the answer, but people that pick that up, okay, but I still have confidence in you. I appreciate that. And I appreciate we're in this together. And I think that's really the key. That's so important.
Mm-hmm. And it's a bit counterintuitive because our own brain wants answers. We don't think about presence. We think about answers. Yeah. Okay. So that's such a great reminder for all of us. All right. So Irvin, in addition to managing the quality of your presence, what else can leaders do when they don't have all the answers?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I was kind of thinking about that. And I was thinking, you know, there's a few little kind of tips maybe that we can give. I think the first one, and we've mentioned this before, is if you name it, you can tame it. You know, it's the whole thing with emotions that we talk about. But can we acknowledge the uncertainty? It's this whole thing, this pretense that perhaps the leader has to be in control and the leader has to have the crystal ball. And I think what people appreciate is acknowledge what people are feeling. And if you do that, you will increase, you know, credibility. We don't have all the information, but here's what we do know. And let's move on from there. You know, that builds trust. So I think that just the acknowledgement to begin with is good. And then I think at times, whenever we are uncertain, revisiting, you know, the core values. So if the how isn't clear, maybe the why can get us there. We may not have the full path here. We may not know all the answers, but we know what we stand for. Here's our values. Here's our mission. Here's our priorities. How does that inform us in how we go ahead? And I think that's really good because I think that reminder is really important. I think another thing we can do as well is so often leaders are in very complex situations. We live in a complex world and there's different elements of a decision that have to be made. And maybe it's 9 decisions that have to be made in the long term. But can we reduce it to the next decision we have to make? What is the next best decision we have to make? And why we not might not have the whole roadmap, maybe not have all 9 in place that we have to get there, but maybe we have a little clarity about what should we do next? The other thing as well is it's getting back to the whole leader feeling they have to have the crystal ball. It's can I tie into the collective wisdom of the group. And people really respect that. People can say, you know, first of all, acknowledge the uncertainty and then say, hey, what are you seeing from your perspective? Maybe I'm missing something. Let's talk about that. And I think that's ownership. It's spreading ownership around the decision. And then I think going back to exactly the last thing I'll say is the calmness. Can we approach this with a calmness, this less anxious presence? I think it's also a good question. How adaptable am I? So in other words, am I willing to be surprised? Am I willing to be adaptable to what might come up? So those are kind of some quick things that come to mind. I'm curious, Bridget, anything else as you think about this comes to mind for you?
Yeah, I think one other thing, and this is also counterintuitive, just like focusing on presence, I think is a little bit counterintuitive. And that is that communicate frequently, even when little has changed. Like frequency matters more than some long update that you wait months to give until you have all the information, right? So it's better to have these frequent, shorter kind of updates where, you know, you might say, you know, we're still waiting on data, but here's what hasn't changed.
Yeah.
And I think what people don't realize is it's the connection. It's the points of connection that are so reassuring and so calming. It doesn't matter that you don't necessarily have big news to share. And I've seen so many leaders say, well, I don't have anything new to say.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's okay. Just tell them that and just be present to them.
Yeah.
And I think that sends a stronger message of stability than, you know, weeks of silence, right? Waiting to have those details, right?
Yeah, because I think, you know, it's interesting. I think, Bridget, one of the things that when there is a gap, we will fill it with whatever stories on our mind. And so even just that reassurance that, hey, this is an update, this is where we're at, it prevents that person. Well, this person hasn't spoken yet. No wonder what's happening. And the reason they're not saying anything is because of this and this and this. So it kind of cuts all of that kind of angst that's going on as well in the story making.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Is there any examples that come to mind of someone who faced great uncertainty and yet had to make decisions? And I'm curious about someone who you think did that, and they can do it well, or they can do it medium well or whatever. But I'm just curious, what comes to mind for you?
Yeah. So there is one example that comes to mind, and partly because she has just come out with a memoir. Mm. And this is Jacinda Ardern, former Prime Minister of New Zealand, right? So she's got a book out. And, you know, during the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, I remember, I don't know if you heard about her back then, Irvin, but I did. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, wow, she's like teaching a master class on how to deal with uncertainty in the early days when we were all just panicking. I mean, it's hard to remember this, but those early days were really, really rough.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the things that she got right were that she admitted that we don't have all the answers yet. Like, to your point, she acknowledged we don't have all the answers. She didn't hide the fact that things were uncertain. And I think that the other thing she did that was so good is that she communicated frequently and regularly. You know, she had those regular press conferences, sometimes from her own home. And she was really good at being frequent, consistent, clear, and plain spoken when she did talk to folks, you know, and again, admitting what was still being worked out, what steps are being taken next. And this transparency and frequency of communication, and also the authenticity and compassion with which she spoke, was really pretty remarkable. You know, at one point, early on in this process, surveys showed that at the time, over 80% of New Zealanders trusted her leadership during the pandemic. Now, that is remarkable for a political figure.
Oh, when you think about it. Yeah.
Over 80% said, "We trust you." And I just think, well, again, because she was steady, she was consistent, she was empathetic, she was real, and she was present. Now, we know that later, and she in her book talks a little bit about this, she resigned. You know, she burnt out because there was this groundswell, this backlash that was in a context of a global backlash as COVID began to wane. And some of that great support turned against her. But what can't be argued with, I think, is that the quality of her communication and presence in those early days quieted the fears of an entire country and made people feel safe in the midst of a global pandemic.
Yeah.
What most stands out to you about her?
Yeah, it's such an interesting example because I think it's a great example as well of we often forget what it was like in the beginnings of COVID, et cetera. And I think it's hard. It's so easy to be the Monday morning quarterback. You know, it's so easy to, well, if I was there, I'd have done this. And if I was there, I'd have done that. And really, there was a perfect example of something that was mysterious, that we didn't have all the answers. And you know, you can say, well, she made mistakes, et cetera. Okay. But the thing about it is what you can take away is leading in the midst of that uncertainty. And it's more than just, I think what I love about this example, it's more than just getting the right decision. It's also about remaining connected with people, reassuring people, listening to people, et cetera. And I think that's really important. And I think that's what I love about this example, because I think she embodies both of those. She made some really tough decisions, but clearly she remained connected. And I think that's what people felt.
Yeah, totally agree. What about in your coaching experience, Irvin? Does a client come to mind that you think also was able to deal really well with a lot of uncertainty and not having answers?
Yeah, you know, there is someone I'm thinking about a few years back. She worked for a tech company, and they were a software company, rapidly growing. They had made some acquisitions, and they were launching a new product. There was a lot of uncertainty around the rollout. They were actively rethinking how they should do rollouts. And so I remember in the coaching sessions, like, she really, oh my God, she expressed so beautifully the space she was in. And I almost felt like, you know, she was kind of in this ground that was kind of shifting. She talked about, you know, it's just like every day I go in and customer requirements seem to be shifting. And then I'll get an email and there's bugs in the latest software edition that I have to deal with. And then I'm dealing with the board, and the board have different expectations. And she really, I was like, wow. For me, it was just a taste of what leaders at times have to deal with. And she was like threading this needle really delicately through this situation. What I so admired about her was that she did not pretend. She it would have been so easy for her to exude this air that I have the answers. And she was really great at asking the team to remain flexible. So it's just, you know, we don't know every piece will play out, but here's what we do know, and we'll learn and adapt. And what she was really great was she had total belief and confidence in her team's ability to adapt. So I don't know the answers, but where my faith and confidence is, no matter what's going to happen, we will adapt as a team because I have faith and confidence in you. And that was really, really powerful. And so, you know, she would set up these kind of like what you were talking about before about needing frequent meetings. She would have these pulse meetings. Anyone could raise issues, share what they were seeing, et cetera. And, you know, she went through that experience. It was so powerful because I think, you know, things didn't go to plan. And yet what really happened was that the team were adaptable. They felt included, respected, energized. And it was, I remember her saying, I said, well, how did the launch go? She said, oh, it was messy. And she said, it was like an S show. And, but she said, you know, the lessons coming out of that were that we are more cohesive, more innovative, more resilient than we really thought we were. And I think that's beautiful. It's because there's an example of it didn't go perfectly. The decisions weren't perfect, but because faith was placed in the right area, they came out stronger as a team.
Wow, that's such a great example. And you know, I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, man, she must have just been some days filled with such anxiety.
Oh yeah, totally.
And kind of like a duck that looks serene on the water, but is paddling like crazy underneath, you know?
Yes.
So kudos to her for managing herself in this process. You know, what really stands out to me are two things. One is that she explicitly communicated the faith she had in the team to be adaptable. Yeah. And you know, you can't BS a team on that, right?
No.
You either believe it or you don't. So clearly she did. But I think how wonderful that she communicated that out loud to them.
Yeah.
And I also like the idea of the pulse meetings, because it sounds like, Irvin, those were like moments of true dialogue. It wasn't just updating. It was, what are you hearing? What are you seeing? What ideas do you have? Right? Terrific. Love it. Love it so, so much.
Well, it's really interesting. I love those two examples. I think they're great examples because I think it helps us see that you don't need a crystal ball. It helps us see a few things. And I think one is leadership is certainly not about having the answers. It's about leading with presence. And I think that's incredibly important. I love what you said. Leadership presence matters more than information. So it's kind of a great touching point for leaders. You know, if they're going through an experience like this, so often I think leaders can like, what information am I going to share today? And that can be important, but I think equally important is how am I going to show up today?
Yes.
Like what presence am I bringing to this meeting is absolutely just as vital. And I think the next time, you know, you're going through a period of uncertainty and resilience, it's about showing up with honesty, with clarity about what you know and you don't know, and courage to take the step into the unknown. So Bridget, this has been a great, thank you for the discussion. I really appreciate this. And I just know many of my coaching clients are going through elements of this as we speak. I think it is pervasive for all leaders. And I think hopefully, you know, this has been giving some insights if you are in the midst of uncertainty. And if you're not, you're going to be.
If nothing else, it's good to know that you're in good company. You are not alone. And I know this conversation has given me some really good encouragement and some reassurance. And I hope it's done that for our listeners as well. So thanks, everybody. Great to be with you as always.
Thanks, everyone. Bye now.